Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
May 28th exploded in federal court with a witness taking the stand and dropping allegations that felt less like testimony and more like a detonation under the defense's strategy. By midday, Sean Diddy Combs wasn't just a defendant facing serious federal charges. He was, according to sworn testimony, someone who used revenge porn threats to control a partner. And if that wasn't enough, the defense threw a legal Hail Mary, trying to blow the whistle on the whole proceeding with a mistrial motion. Spoiler alert, it didn't work. The day's star witness was Deontay Nash. If the name doesn't ring a bell, he's a celebrity stylist, the kind of guy who dresses the stars and keeps the chaos behind the scenes quiet. But on Wednesday, he wasn't styling anyone. He was testifying. Nash had worked closely with both Diddy and Cassie Ventura, Diddy's ex-girlfriend and a central figure in this trial. And what Nash laid out wasn't gossip or secondhand hearsay. It was direct, chilling, and personal. According to Nash, Diddy allegedly subjected Ventura to years of physical abuse. He didn't mince words. He told the jury that the music mogul would erupt in violence, something Nash said he personally witnessed. But it wasn't just the hitting. Nash detailed a particularly disturbing incident that left the courtroom stunned. He said that after Ventura had, in Diddy's words, messed up, Combs told her he was going to punish her by putting their sex tapes on the internet. Let that sink in. A man in one of the most powerful positions in the entertainment world, threatening to humiliate his partner on a global scale if she didn't fall in line. That's not just abuse. That's digital blackmail. It's power and control, weaponized. And while that may sound like tabloid fodder, here's the thing. It's not just about salacious details. It's about pattern. That kind of threat fits into the prosecution's argument that Combs didn't just act badly here and there. They're alleging a long-term coordinated effort to dominate, silence, and exploit. Nash's testimony added weight to that claim because it wasn't hypothetical. It was specific. It was firsthand. And it gave the jury a direct window into what this alleged dynamic looked like behind closed doors. Now, the defense wasn't just going to sit there and let this all slide. Enter what might go down as one of the more desperate moves in this trial so far, a motion for mistrial. Their target? Testimony tied to a completely different allegation, the 2012 arson involving Kid Cudi's car. If you're not up to speed, here's the short version. Kid Cudi, rapper, artist, and one-time friend of Diddy, had his car torched in his driveway after rumors circulated that he had a relationship with Cassie. Not long after that fire, Combs allegedly confronted Ventura and made it clear he knew about her contact with Cudi. Fast forward to the current trial, and prosecutors brought in a fire investigator to talk about that very incident. During that testimony, the prosecution posed a question suggesting that fingerprint evidence may have been destroyed in the blaze, an implication that someone had possibly tampered with the scene. The defense hit the panic button. They argued that the jury hearing about potentially destroyed fingerprints would unfairly lead them to believe Combs had a hand in that, even though he hasn't been charged with the arson itself. In other words, they claimed the jury was being led to connect dots that shouldn't legally be connected. Their argument, this was so prejudicial, so damaging, that it tainted the entire proceeding. Mistrial, please. But Judge Arun Subramanian wasn't having it. He denied the motion on the spot. No lengthy deliberation, no dramatic pause, just a clear message. This trial is staying on the rails. The judge told the jury to disregard the mention of fingerprint evidence and moved on. In courtroom terms, that's the equivalent of waving off a wild pitch and telling the game to continue. Subramanian's handling of that moment was telling. He's made it clear from day one that this trial will be thorough, but it won't be derailed by theatrics. He's willing to hear out objections, but not at the expense of momentum or structure. So when the defense tried to claim the fingerprint mention had poisoned the well, the judge essentially said, "Nah, we're not throwing out the whole trial over one drop." That decision not only kept the case moving, it also set a tone. It signaled to both sides that while the court would enforce fairness, it wouldn't tolerate attempts to stall the case or weaponize technicalities. So by the time court adjourned on May 28th, two things were clear. First, the jury had heard a powerful insider claim that Diddy used threats of digital humiliation to control someone he was supposed to love. And second, the defense had tried and failed to put a stop to it all by calling for a mistrial. Instead of shutting down the narrative, they gave it more oxygen. Because this isn't just about one outburst or one threat. The prosecution is laying brick after brick, and Nash's testimony is just one piece in a larger structure they're trying to build. A structure, they say, shows this wasn't chaos, it was choreography. And it's from that structure that we begin to understand the strategy behind the charges and the blueprints prosecutors are using to try to take down a man who, for decades, seemed untouchable. With the mistrial motion dead in the water and Nash's words on the record, the courtroom is now turning to a much bigger question. Can the government prove that these moments weren't random, but part of a coordinated enterprise? That's where this case is heading, and that's what we'll explore next. If you walked into that courtroom cold, hearing one story after another, sex tape threats, car fires, beatings, parties that sound more like controlled environments than celebrations, you might think the prosecution was throwing everything they could find at the wall to see what sticks. But that's not what's happening here. What the federal government is doing in this trial is something very deliberate. They're not just telling stories. They're building a case that says all these moments, all these seemingly scattered incidents are part of something much bigger. And the name for that bigger thing is racketeering conspiracy. Here's how it works. Under RICO, the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, you don't have to prove that a person committed just one crime. You prove that they participated in a pattern of criminal activity tied together by a common purpose. It was originally designed to go after mob bosses and organized crime syndicates. Think mafia dons who never pulled the trigger themselves but gave the orders that led to violence, extortion, trafficking. But prosecutors have increasingly used RICO to tackle other kinds of enterprises, corporate fraud rings, gangs, even corrupt public officials. And now they're applying it to Sean Diddy Combs. The charge here isn't that Combs just had a bad temper or got out of control one night. It's that he allegedly built, sustained, and protected a lifestyle powered by criminal behavior, specifically the exploitation, manipulation, and silencing of people around him. And under RICO, the prosecution doesn't have to prove that every single alleged act would stand on its own in court. What they have to show is that those acts form a consistent pattern, one that benefited a larger scheme. That's why testimony like Deontay Nash's matters so much. In isolation, Nash's account of Diddy threatening to leak Cassie Ventura's sex tapes might sound like a horrifying, deeply personal moment of abuse. But within the prosecution's RICO framework, it's more than that. It's an alleged tactic of control. It fits into a larger strategy, one where threats, intimidation, and public humiliation are used to maintain dominance over others, particularly women. And it's not just Nash. Other witnesses have described similar patterns. Cassie Ventura herself has alleged years of abuse, including physical violence, coercion, and drug-fueled freak-off parties designed to degrade and control. Then there's Kid Cudi, who testified that his car was mysteriously torched not long after Diddy discovered he had a connection to Ventura. Even if Combs isn't charged directly with that arson, prosecutors are using the event as part of a bigger picture. Under RICO, these individual puzzle pieces don't need to be charged crimes. They just need to fit together into a recognizable image of systemic criminal behavior. That image, according to the government, is one of a powerful man using his influence, money, and fear to create an ecosystem where people were disposable. Silence was bought or forced, and consequences were avoided until now. The defense, of course, sees this very differently. From their perspective, this case has turned into a circus of bad acts, a pile-on of unrelated accusations brought in to smear Combs' reputation rather than prove actual crimes. They argue that RICO is being stretched here, that the prosecution is using it as a catch-all to bypass the usual evidentiary standards. In their eyes, the courtroom has become a theater of uncharged allegations that are emotional, yes, but legally irrelevant. They've tried to shut it down. When the fire investigator's testimony veered into fingerprint evidence possibly being destroyed in the Kid Cootie Car arson, they moved for a mistrial. They claimed it was over the line, too prejudicial, too speculative. Judge Arun Subramanian didn't agree. He denied the motion, instructed the jury to disregard that part of the testimony, and made it clear that the trial would continue. That decision wasn't just procedural. It reaffirmed the court's stance that pattern-based evidence, even if it's uncomfortable, is fair game under the RICO statute. Subramanian has taken a steady hand here. He's not letting the courtroom spiral into chaos, but he's also not shutting the door on the broader narrative. His rulings show an understanding of what RICO cases are built on: context, connection, and cohesion. Not every piece of testimony has to be a bombshell on its own. What matters is how it fits into the prosecution's architecture. And that architecture is getting more defined by the day. The government is stacking bricks, not just one shocking incident or one victim's account, but an interconnected story that stretches across years, states, relationships, and reputations. They're showing how certain behaviors repeated themselves, how people who tried to leave were allegedly punished, how silence was maintained not just with fear, but with leverage, like tapes, secrets, and money. What's at stake here isn't just whether Sean Combs did this or that. It's whether a jury can be convinced that all these pieces point to a system. Because if they buy into that framework, if they believe that these actions were coordinated and intentional, then this isn't just a trial about assault or blackmail or a bad relationship gone toxic. It becomes a case about organized crime, and Combs could be facing life in prison. That's what makes this moment so crucial. The prosecution isn't betting on a single moment of outrage to carry them through. They're betting on accumulation, on the idea that even if each witness has their flaws and each accusation has its challenges, the totality adds up to something undeniable. A pattern, a strategy, a criminal enterprise, whether or not the jury will agree, remains to be seen. But the government has made its move, and it's clear they're not just trying to prosecute a man. They're trying to dismantle a machine.
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.